Good afternoon, and welcome to Spokane Public Radio's Northwest Arts Review, a half hour exploring the people, places, and events forming the rich arts tapestry we enjoy here in the Inland Northwest and our wider Intermountain Northwest region. I'm Jim Tevenin, pleased to be your guide on this journey. Today, Chris Messini welcomes another of the latest round of Spokane Arts grantees, writer and illustrator Chelsea Martin. James Lowe drops by with some good news from the Spokane Symphony. Likewise, Julene Dance with a progress report on the Music Conservatory of Coeur d'Alene. And we hear from those bringers of seasonal joy, the Clarion Brass. This is Northwest Arts Review. We've checked in with Spokane Symphony Orchestra music director James Lowe each month about the immensely difficult situation faced by the orchestra in this time of pandemic. Our latest conversation had a decidedly more hopeful tone, due in part to the success of the orchestra's recent fundraising gala.
So yes, we had our gala, which was our kind of first virtual online event. Very much uncharted territory for us. We hadn't done anything like that before in the past, and it was a huge success. We raised well over $165,000 from our wonderful supporters. So we're very, very pleased with how that did. And I think it also shows us that online content is something that people want to engage with, and it's a different way of engaging with the public. But it's obviously, I don't think it's as good as a live event, but I think they can certainly work, which is a great thing to learn.
You know, it's fascinating as I see events like this that were put on when the lockdowns and all first began versus the production of the final product these days. It's pretty amazing.
Yes, I think this has been a steep learning curve for all of us, you know, pivoting from essentially a live way of producing something. You know, the way classical musicians have produced concerts hasn't changed that much, you know, since the 18th, 19th century. So to suddenly have to learn an entirely new way of doing things and of keeping people engaged in a new way has been a steep learning curve, but I think a very good one. I think it's very good for our entire industry to learn new things and understand new things and get to grips with things. And I think this has forced us to do that.
Yeah, it's always good to kind of stir things up, stir the pot. Sometimes I feel as though we've been emulsified in the process here, that it's been such a violent stirring that went on. And I should ask right now, how are things going in Scotland for you? What's the situation there?
Well, the situation here is pretty much like when we last spoke. We have been in a kind of state of quasi-lockdown here. The region in which I live is actually the least affected in the entirety of the UK. So we're now in tier one. We just moved this week into tier one, which means that we may even be able to go out and do some carol singing as long as we're outside, which is incredibly exciting thought. Scotland is doing okay. It's a relatively small population here. Of course, as you go down to London, London's just moved into another tier, much higher. So I think everybody's nervously eyeing the holiday season and to wonder how we all navigate that. But the way I personally see it is hopefully just one year where we have to sacrifice our normal celebrations and do something a bit smaller. And by next year, we can go back to a bit more normality.
And it's a good question, just how normal is going to look when we get back to whatever. They will have big quotation marks around it, that's for sure.
I think that's a very good point. I think normal will, of course, it won't be straight back to normal as we knew it this time last year, but that's something we'll have to adapt to. And I think one of the things we've learnt is how to be very quick and adaptive. So that's no bad thing, but their skills I think we'll be using for a while yet.
Well, we need to dig into what's coming up next for the symphony, which is New Year's has always been a very big deal, and typically it was marked, especially in Eckhard Preuss years, by a performance of the Beethoven 9, a very European way of ushering in a new year. Obviously not possible this time, but there is a virtual concert that will be part of the landscape when we get to New Year's. Tell us about how that's going to work.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, I'm particularly saddened, of course, because this was going to be my first Beethoven 9 New Year's performance. But there we are. It got cancelled. And it's Beethoven's 250th birthday year. So to end this year with that piece would have been absolutely appropriate. And it was something I was very much looking forward to. But there we are. But instead, we're having an online evening. We're calling it kind of Spokane Symphony and Friends. We have the fantastic Spokane author, of course, Jess Walter, is coming to give us like a New Year's address. I'm thinking of it's a little bit like the Queen's speeches here on Christmas Day, but in Spokane flavor. And we have Cami Bradley, who, of course, is a wonderful locally based singer who was on America's Got Talent, hugely successful there. And, of course, our own musicians. We have a little string orchestra that we can get safely socially distanced on stage, which will be led by Mateusz Wolski. And it's going to be a program of light classical music and some of Cami's songs and a couple of the usual things that you would expect to find in a New Year's Eve concert. So it'll be a nice celebration. The program's about an hour. Tickets are available from our website. And suggested donation is $20. If you can't afford that, if you've been impacted by COVID, you can't afford that, then there's a special code. If you can afford more, of course, we're always happy for extra donations. But that's the idea. And I think it's going to air at 4 o'clock in the afternoon on the 31st. If you buy a ticket, you can watch it through well into June. So it's very good value for money, and it's going to be a very fun program.
Let me ask the technical question. So there are now there's been the gala, a very successful virtual performance, and now coming up the New Year's concert, undoubtedly that will be just a wonderful virtual experience. In terms of putting this together and working with musicians, what has evolved as your way of doing that, just in terms of who is where and who does what?
That's a very interesting question. So in terms of the actual performance, we are pre-recording this week, in fact. One of the main reasons for that is to live stream symphony orchestras. If you can imagine, it's a little bit like putting Formula One or you know the football on TV. It's a very fast-moving, very difficult thing to do. So it's actually much easier to pre-record for us at this stage. So we're recording it this week. And it's been a kind of effort from loads of people. I mean, we've all kind of been working day and night in the last few weeks on getting this together. It's a local production company. Don Hamilton is producing it for us. It's been hugely fun. As we say, you know, it's very strange to suddenly turn into a TV production studio from being an orchestral this time. To pivot that quickly has been quite tricky.
And how do you, to ask the obvious question, how do you conduct a performance like this?
Well, I won't be conducting it per se. I'm listening to the rehearsals remotely, and I'll be kind of virtually present at the recording session. So I like to imagine it'll be like the voice of God will come over a speaker. Or it'll just be me saying, that sounds great. Let's just do one more for good luck. So I'm kind of producing it remotely that way. Mateusz will be leading it, directing it from the concertmaster's chair.
The idea of putting together a performance like this, it's one thing when all the musicians are together on stage at the Fox and you are remote. Well, you can make that work. The things that just absolutely gobsmack me are the ones where there are, especially with choirs, there are singers in various locations. And it's like this super Zoom meeting with the conductor in the middle frame, and somehow they make it all work, which I imagine the post-production must be a nightmare, but that's another matter.
Well, it's interesting you should say that. I think you should certainly tune into our New Year's Eve program, because there may well be some of that kind of Brady Bunch Celebrity Squares music making going on as part of that as well, but I'm not going to give away too much. But yeah, it takes a lot of effort. There's a lot of very technical jiggery-pokery that you can do with pre-recording your own tracks to a central click track. And then, like you say, it's the post-production is where it's key to make it sound like a choir singing and not just or instruments playing and not just a bunch of people in their backyards is very, very difficult indeed.
Right. Anything that you can share with us in terms of what might be coming up after the first of the year, even in the most general terms?
In the most general terms, yes. We're still looking at recording a digital concert series. Unfortunately, that keeps getting pushed back, of course, as the second wave hits. It seems less and less prudent to have lots of musicians sitting on stage right now. But that is still something that we'll be doing, particularly now the vaccinations have finally started. And also, we're actually trialing a little project now around the holiday period. Some of our little groups of musicians going and playing virtually over Zoom some caroling concerts into care homes and hospitals. So I think that's a model that we're looking at, and that would be a really nice thing. I would love to see having little groups virtually visiting care homes, hospitals, and centres so that people can have a little bit of live music, even if it's over a screen.
Right. And all this is very good, too, because it does keep musicians occupied with their craft. Because I know it's all too easy, if you don't have a gig, just to let it all drop. And then, oh my, the heavy lifting once you get back to it.
Yes, well, I know this myself. I call myself a non-practicing viola player for that very reason. But yes, I think it is hugely important. You know, musicians, you know, we were all put on earth to perform music for people. So however we can do that, I think, to be honest, it's less about losing your playing chops, because these are all fantastic professional players who, you know, I think will be staying fit. It's actually more about the human contact and the communication that's within all of these wonderful musicians. Having an outlet, finally. That's the thing that excites me the most.
Well, we are looking forward to all of it. It will be a good New Year's, because there will be the presence of the Spokane Symphony with it. So, James Lowe, thank you for your time today, and have a lovely Christmas, and I do hope that you get to go out caroling at some point.
I hope so, too. Happy holidays, Jim.
More about the Spokane Symphony Orchestra is at their website, spokanesymphony.org. One sure sign of Christmas's approach here in the Inland Northwest is the sound of the clarion brass. William Berry's unique and uniquely fun arrangements, played by some of the region's best brass players, are sadly unavailable to sample live this year, but we do have recordings. Dancing Shoes, preferably with bobby socks, recommended for this one. We'll be right back. Johnny Marks classic from 1958, Rockin' Around the Christmas Tree, arranged by William Berry and played by the Clarion Brass. As mentioned, no live performances this year, but music to hear and a special video offering as well is at their website, figarotunes.com.
For Spokane Public Radio, I'm Chris Messini. My guest today is Chelsea Martin, a writer and illustrator and recipient of the latest round of Spokane Arts Grant Awards, or SAGA. She's the author of 6 books, as well as several chapbooks, zines, and dozens of published stories, poems, and personal essays. Her humorous essays appear frequently in The Inlander. Her SAGA Award will support the creation of her next novel, titled Art School, about a second-year art student struggling with questions of family, identity, and artistic expression. Chelsea Martin, congratulations, and thanks so much for talking with me.
Hi, Chris. Thank you so much. Yeah, this is great.
So your new novel focuses on the character Joey. What can you tell us about her and her situation?
So Joey is a second-year art student, and she's from a poor background, and she's kind of in this new highbrow art intellectual environment for the first time, meeting rich people for the first time. And so she's kind of grappling with the idea of being an artist when she doesn't fit in with this scene, and kind of gets involved in a film project that she immediately regrets signing up for, which is to remake the film Rushmore, having never seen it. And that's the idea behind it, is that she hasn't seen it, so she's going to be looking at like cultural interpretations or whatever, or talking to people who have seen it and trying to like piece together what the movie is. So that's her dumb project that she's stuck doing for the semester. And then in the background of that, her family is like having a total meltdown crisis, and her older sister disappears, leaving her son with their mom, who can't really take care of him because she's got other obligations. So it's just kind of, her family is a mess in the background, and she's grappling with that too, like how meaningful it is to make art when there are bigger problems in the world, and issues that would benefit from your attention a lot, but you're instead making art.
Well, I think anyone who's familiar with your writing from The Inlander or your zines or any of your books knows that you're a very funny writer and have a very unique perspective on situations. And I'm sure that this book is no different, but it's also, it's tackling some really big questions that you alluded to. You know, I think at the heart of it is like, what is art for when the world is so messed up in so many ways? And, in particular for Joey, like, do poor people have a place in the art world, or are they allowed to make art? Which sounds like a funny question, but it's a really important one. So how do you try to grapple with that or answer it in the novel?
I'm not trying to answer any of those big questions. I think I'm proposing them as kind of things we should be thinking about more. I think we give a lot of priority to people who come from money to make art and to write our movies and to write the things that we're consuming all the time. And people who come from money have the resources to move up in the art world. I don't know. I mean, they're big questions, and I feel like it's really hard to talk about succinctly.
That's why you write a novel about it.
Yeah. It's like a novel length question,
yeah.
I guess.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Well, the sort of structure of this story is, I think, probably close to your own heart and experience in many ways. Anyone who is familiar with your memoir knows that you came from sort of a similar background, didn't grow up super wealthy, but wanted to be an artist. And now as an adult and, a working artist, you're very prolific in a lot of different mediums. You write fiction, you write humor, you write comics and make zines. So for you, what drives that impulse, and how have you faced those own societal pressures in your own artistic endeavors?
I mean, I feel like it's a miracle that I've had the time and the opportunity to make as much work as I've made. I've had a lot of lucky breaks, and someone else in my position wouldn't have had all those lucky breaks. But I think I just prioritize that. I feel insane when I'm not creating things. And if I go too long without writing or making something, I just don't really know who I am. So I think that's what drives me, that feeling of like, I need to get this out on paper. I need to see this outside my head.
I'm talking with Chelsea Martin, author and illustrator and recipient of a Spokane Arts Grant Award to support the creation of a new novel titled Art School. I mean, bringing it back to the Saga Grant, and it feels like it ties in so well with sort of the concept of your novel. You know, the book is about art and the lack of financial resources to support it, and yeah. Then you've received this grant from Spokane Arts. So what does it mean to get this to be able to support your work in that way?
Yeah, it does feel kind of perfect because I feel like it is doing exactly what I address as a problem, which is like there's all these artists out there who aren't supported and who don't have the resources that can't really make their art because they just have to focus on making money and making it in our capitalistic culture. So getting the grant is, I just feel like hugely supported and really like, okay, other people care what a poor artist has to say, you know, they want to hear this story. And I don't know, it's really perfect.
Well, my guest has been Chelsea Martin, author and illustrator who's the recipient of a Spokane Arts Grant Award to support the creation of her latest novel, Art School. Chelsea, thanks for taking the time to talk with me.
Yeah, thank you so much, Chris.
After a couple of years of dreaming combined with uncertainty, the Music Conservatory of Coeur d'Alene is secured, spruced up, and ready for public inspection, as we'll hear in my chat with Executive Director Julien Dance. I again have the delight of speaking with Julien Dance, who is the executive director of the Aborning Institution in Coeur d'Alene, which is the Coeur d'Alene Music Conservatory. So, Julien, welcome again.
Thank you so much. And I really appreciate you keeping us concurrent with the public. And, well, anyway, just this last week, we put the Music Conservatory of Coeur d'Alene on our front doors. Those letters are on that glass, and it looks pretty refined. We have all the electrical. We did all the code electrical and refinished the floors. We've done a total washdown and repainting of a couple of the rooms. All the old carpeting's been taken out. It's been a lot of trips to the dump and keeping the aura of the old house. But it's clean and it's sparkling, and we're thrilled. We've been touching up the house constantly when we go down there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's ready to go. We have the name on the front doors. Silver Creek Signs with Coeur d'Alene will be building us a new lighted sign that will be installed right in front of the house. And I've had landscapers come. They want to work on the yard. It's pretty exciting. We've had a lot of people walk through the front door. We have some new people on our board. So we are ready to go. We have about 12 people who are faculty. And besides private lessons, we're looking at some other curriculum that I think that, young and old will appreciate.
What are the instruments that are covered in terms of instruction at this point? If you were to begin instruction tomorrow, what would you be able to offer in terms of instrumental instruction?
We have three people who are teaching piano. We have two people who are teaching voice. We have a flautist. We have a violin, viola, and we have a clarinet and a beautiful French horn instructor. We're planning to do some group classes. We have the Little Mozarts class, which will start with the very young ones, like walking on up to age two, and then an instrument carousel. We are aligning ourselves with the curriculum of the Sandpoint Conservatory.
Mm-hmm.
The instrument exploration will begin from 4 to 6, anywhere, you know, around there. Some kids are ready, and up more ready than others. and then we'll hop into private lessons and continuing on with very early theory and then graduating in that theory program as they move through the program. It's all new to us, but not really, because mm-hmm. we're all musicians.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But creating a program like this just seems like home in the music world.
Your overall concept then is to begin very young and follow these young students through as they grow and progress, and the conservatory becomes kind of an organic part of their life, if I understand what you're getting at here.
Yes, yes. I've had mothers talk to me that are participating in the program in Sandpoint, and they love it. This early childhood music is glorious for the mother and the child. They both go to the class together. And then it carries on at home. You know, the little songs and the things that they learn, they do it at home. And then they come back and they learn more, and rhythm and pitch and tone and movement. All of that makes them healthier, I think, in mind and body.
Absolutely. I think it's something that we desperately need in our larger society is a real and serious focus on the arts. And so the conservatory is an important part of that particular thing. Now, we actually get to see what has been done in a series of open houses coming up, yes?
Right. This Saturday from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m., it will be, you know, festive and holiday. We're opening up the house to the public. And then on the 5th and the 7th of January, both that Tuesday and that Thursday from 3 p.m. to 7 p.m., we want people to feel free to come in and ask us questions about registration, about the curriculum. There will be some faculty members there. We'll have some music going. It's just beautiful. It shows a place for music.
All right, wonderful. So those are coming up, and anyone who wanted more information about the conservatory, perhaps a way that they could help out, then your website is at the ready at cdaconservatory.org, yes?
Right, and we're just putting the registration materials on there this week. You can see all the faculty on there. You can see events that we've had and a little bit of the history, so where it's going to be. There's a donate page. We're always ready for more donations.
Of course, yeah. Well, Julene, thank you so much for talking with us this morning. Congratulations for all that you've been able to do to date. And we really look forward to what was just an idea a couple of years ago, having real functioning reality very, very soon.
It's so exciting. I'm really happy to see that, you know, music mentored here. It's really wonderful.
Again, their website is cdaconservatory.org. Thanks for listening to Northwest Arts Review. I'm Jim Tavenin. Help today came from Chris Massini. We're grateful as well for the contributions of Julene Dance, James Lowe, and for sure, William Berry and the members of Clarion Brass. Join us again next week for another Northwest Arts Review.